Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Secrets to Attract Your Dream Partner monthly teleseminar series. So today's call is entitled Another New Year and Another New Year's Resolution, How to Be Successful This Year. I'm Carol Anderson, and so as usual, I want to give you my disclaimer, and that while I'm giving you as much information as I possibly can during these 12 monthly phone calls, the information itself is not going to be enough to be able to accomplish the objectives of all these calls and the things I'm teaching you. There's really a huge difference between knowledge and practice or implementing that knowledge. And so in order to really attract your dream partner, you will very likely need to learn and practice some skills as well as experience some specific growth exercises. And these cannot be done over the telephone. But if you're interested in finding out more about that, you can take a look at my website and I'll be emailing you that along with the link to the recording when I get that edited. And I will try to get that edited as soon as possible. I apologize for not getting it out earlier last month. So anyway, like I said, I'm Carol Anderson, and I want to welcome you here today on this call. And again, as usual, I really want to acknowledge you for being here this morning, because you could have slept in and done probably a dozen other things, but you are here. And hopefully you're here because the information I'm giving you on this subject is important to you. And most singles perceive that the quest for a relationship is merely about finding the right partner. And you may just be lucky to find the right partner, but it's more likely going to involve more than that. And my intention is to help you become the right partner, and then you'll be able to attract the perfect partner for yourself. Water always seeks its own level, and you will always find a partner who is wounded at the level you are and who has the same kinds of issues, or sometimes the opposite issues that you do, but issues nonetheless. And so the more you can grow and become a better partner, learning new skills and so forth, the happier you'll be in a relationship. And so I want to acknowledge you for being here today. Let's talk a little bit about what we are going to learn today. First, what you're going to learn is why you don't often reach your New Year's resolutions and what to do about it. I want to also share with you the important difference that you need to know in order to be successful between New Year's resolutions and goals. And then I'm also going to share with you how to be smart about setting goals and to know if you're making progress. So if you're smart about your goals, you will know if you're making progress. I'm going to actually give you an example of some goals to reach your dream relationship. And I've really got a lot more than that planned for you today. So I hope that you really enjoy this conference call today. And again, I want to say a little bit about myself for those of you who may be new on the call. I have been a licensed marriage and family therapist and specializing in relationships for really over 20 years. And I've actually taken the equivalent of a second master's degree. I got my first master's degree in 1986 and did my internship and specialized in private practice and working with couples, and didn't know what I was doing back then, but did my best, which wasn't very good. And so when I realized that, I got the equivalent of a second master's degree. It's the equivalent of 30 more college units in the hours of training that I've had. And so I'm known in my community of Fresno as the go-to therapist for relationships. And I present weekend workshops for both couples and singles. The purpose of those workshops is to help them create and keep the relationship of their dreams. I'm actually in the process of retiring from my therapy practice in the next year or so, I hope, so that I can help more people through relationship coaching to avoid the stigma of mental illness that is required for therapy. But I wasn't born a therapist or a coach. And so I want to tell you a little story. When I was 22, my new husband Larry and I set out to climb Half Dome in Yosemite. I was not prepared in any way for the challenge that lay ahead of me, but I didn't know that. As a result, after hiking 8 miles up a steep and dangerous trail and at a very high elevation, when I had almost reached my goal of Half Dome summit, my fear got the best of me. And unfortunately, I totally chickened out. And for the past 38 years, I've regretted that decision that I never reached my goal of climbing Half Dome. Well, with my 60th birthday falling on Labor Day in 2008, now you know how old I am, and actually I was born on Labor Day, so I wanted to do something special for the number 60 and the fact that it happened to be on Labor Day, I decided to celebrate on top of Half Dome. So I worked very hard to get in shape. I went to a personal trainer. I lost about 20 pounds. I took several practice trips, and I did as much cardio as I could. But I was still extremely worried, knowing what was ahead of me and how terrified I was the first time. But this time I had about 8 experienced hikers that were traveling with me, walking with me, so there was really no backing out. So we headed out of Yosemite Valley at about 8 a.m. in the morning and started up the infamous Mist Trail adjacent to Vernal Falls. The climb was a grueling 500 steep, uneven granite steps, and the elevation was already well above 5,000 feet, so if you've ever gone up to that elevation, you know how difficult it is to breathe and really, you know, be strenuous at the same time. We stopped often to rest, and we finally arrived at Little Yosemite Valley, where we were going to camp, late that afternoon. We set up our tents and ate dinner, visited a little while around the campfire, and went to bed early. However, I didn't get very much sleep, because I was listening for bears all night long. And bears are very common up there. So after hauling out of our toasty sleeping bags at about 7 a.m., we grabbed a quick protein breakfast, and bringing only water, hats, light jackets, and snacks, we ditched the rest of our gear in our tents and finally got on the trail about 8 a.m. Our destination was the 8,800-foot summit of Half Dome, only 4 miles ahead. We slowly climbed the steep but lush trail from about 6,000 to 8,000 feet when we finally saw Half Dome come into full view, and it was breathtaking. We looked up, and we saw these tiny little dots moving around on the top, and we realized those were people who had hiked up the trail before dawn. As we got closer, I had forgotten that in order to climb Half Dome, we'd first have to climb the so-called shoulder. Again, steep, uneven, gravel-laden granite steps zigzag their way up the side of a granite rock. A simple slip might topple one right over the edge before even getting close to the cables. Then the steps disappeared. All that remained was walking up a rather steep granite rock without anything to hold on to. I was already terrified and wasn't even at the cables yet. But my new friends showed me how to navigate the climb, and fortunately, it was uneventful. Upon arriving on the summit of the shoulder, we could see the infamous pair of parallel cables looming clearly ahead of us. The view was absolutely terrifying. The cables stretched straight up the side of the granite at a 60-degree slope. So if you can imagine what that would look like, it's almost straight up, and we couldn't even see the top. Well, did I mention my fear of heights? So there was no backing out now, though. There was no chickening out this time. I really had too many people rooting for me. I had friends rooting for me. I had clients rooting for me. And then, of course, these eight people. Not to mention that I had dedicated my climb as a fundraiser for the Children's Hunger Fund. Well, think of all those starving children. So we pulled on our brand new rubber gloves, which you absolutely must have for that climb, on those steel cables, and we lined up one at a time, sandwiching the less experienced, panic-stricken climbers like myself between the more experienced, stronger ones. At least I knew that someone was there to catch me if I slipped and began to fall down the mountains. And by the way, people die on that every year. I never realized, even though I'd lost 20 pounds, I never realized how much extra weight I was still carrying until I tried to literally pull myself up those cables one arm at a time. Every step took all my energy and all my focus. Just getting up to the next little 2x4 that was bolted into the rock about every 10 feet was all I could manage. Then I'd need to stop for a minute to rest and catch my breath again. Oh, did I mention the lack of oxygen? Well, behind me, my new friend, Sabrina, was a lifesaver. Not ever having met her until the day before, she was now my lifeline, literally between sanity and panic. Constantly encouraging me and coaching me in the skills of climbing that rock, and occasionally even giving me the physical boost I needed to get up over the next steep step in the granite, she gave me the confidence to keep going. I did not realize that that rock was like a peeled onion, and every time the next layer of the onion was broken off, there was anywhere from a 1 to 2 foot step you had to take. And of course, you're leaning back at a 90 degree angle to the rock, and the rock is at 60. So if you go at a 90 degree angle, you're actually headed downhill. If you let go of that cable, you'll topple right on down. So you always have to have one hand on that cable. So then, even though I had confidence to keep going, we climbed for a while, but then she suddenly told me to stop and turn around and look where we had climbed from. Oh, wait, everyone else had said, just don't look down, Carol. And so I'm thinking to her about her, are you nuts, Sabrina? But she insisted. So I slowly turned my sweaty hands inside those hot rubber gloves, gripping the cables for dear life. And I looked down. Did I mention my fear of heights? Oh my gosh. I was halfway up and I couldn't even see the bottom of the cables. What I could see was the 100-foot tall pine trees down there were now minuscule. What was absolutely amazing, though, I realized when I turned and looked down, the total loss of my fear. I climbed onward and upward, finally reaching my goal of the summit. I was overwhelmed with the extraordinary beauty of the 360-degree unobstructed view of the whole Yosemite Valley. It was absolutely incredible. And I was in disbelief that I had actually done it. After 38 years and mourning that I hadn't done it before, I finally achieved my goal to return to Half Dome and conquer my fears. Well, this will probably go down in history as the most memorable birthday I had ever had. So I just wanted you to hear that story because it's very similar to what we do in life when it comes to New Year's resolutions and goals. So why is it so hard to change? Well, first of all, because New Year's resolutions are a short-term attempt to resolve a long-term problem. You vastly underestimate what is going to be required of you when you make that resolution. Most people make a resolution about losing weight. I'm going to lose 10 pounds this year or this month or whatever. And you don't even realize what is required for you to do that. Somewhat like myself, the first time I attempted to climb Half Dome. Now also, and probably even more important, you may have heard me speak before about the survival center of our brain. We call it the old brain, and how it's threatened by any change, even change that is positive. Now why is that? It's because we already know what we are afraid of, and we're usually successful at avoiding those things. So we may not consciously know that what we're afraid of, but we definitely know subconsciously. And as soon as life requires that we make an attempt to change something, we must confront that fear that has been holding us back. And it terrifies our old brain, and the old brain reacts believing that it will surely die. Our old brain only knows safety or danger. And just like an old shoe that's comfortable, our old brain sees staying the same way as comfortable and safe, and change as terrifying. We have to be strategic. Instead of making one ineffective New Year's resolution after another, we need to set smart goals to be successful. Now, there are three ways that we sabotage even goals. And so that's why they need to be SMART goals. The first reason, number one, is that if your goals are not aligned with your life purpose and your vision, which we've spoken about in previous calls and that is recorded, they won't be sufficient to motivate you to reach those goals. Second, if your goals are too vague, you won't know what you're really aiming for or how to accomplish them. Again, causing motivation to be low and or missing the mark completely. And that would be sad if you worked on reaching a goal and then you realized it wasn't even a goal you wanted. The third way that we do this sabotage is that, and this is probably most common for people, that if your goals are unreasonably high and there are no baby steps or baby action steps that move you closer to them, then you will be overwhelmed with the enormity of your challenge and you will likely give up. You see, goals provide the direction in which you're able to express your life purpose. And if you don't set goals to achieve that purpose, you will not be able to live your vision. And without goals, you basically wander aimlessly. Without a life vision, you wander aimlessly. After all, if you don't know where you're going, any old road will get you there. And sometimes in life we do that, and it's okay. But if that's the way we live our life consistently, then when we die, we will have many regrets. So let's visit my Half Dome Challenge again and see how my trip is actually a metaphor for success in reaching your goals. Number one, planning is key. Now, while you can do some things spontaneously, like just take a ride, go up the mountains, take a ride, or go to a movie or out to dinner, you'll have a lot more fun and more chance of success if you plan, and especially for more challenging goals. If it's a challenging goal, you must plan for it. So what does this include? Well, first of all, it includes knowing your vision of what you want for your life, your relationships, your finances, your career, so forth, your education. There's a number of different areas that we want to make achievements in our life, usually. And your vision is an inseparable part of who you are and really serves as an inner guidance system, like a GPS, driving you towards certain choices and away from others. But if you're not living in alignment with your vision, you will either be unhappy, unfulfilled, unsuccessful, or all of the above. In my relationship success training for singles class that I'll be teaching again sometime this next year, I teach you how to identify your life purpose and vision. And there's actually, like I said, a call, which if you have registered, you had to have registered in order to be on this call. So if you go back into the website where the calls are recorded, then you'll find that. I'll send that website to you too. The other part of planning is knowing your destination. And to know, when you know your destination, you have to get out a map and study it. You have to learn the trail. You have to know where the rough spots are going to be, what the best direction is to take. You have to really know that trail. And you have to know where you can safely stop and rest. There's some places you can't really stop. Third, you have to know what the journey will require of you in order to plan for it. And finally, in order to plan, you need to surround yourself with more experienced teammates, just like I did. Get support and advice from experts who have gone before. Sabrina had told me that she was actually a rock climber, and so she knew exactly what she was doing, and I felt very comforted by that. And so you need to listen to them and do what they tell you. Second, preparation is very closely related to planning. They really go hand in hand. So in order to prepare, you must remember to train, train, and train some more. I learned what skills I needed, and that's what you have to do for your journey. You have to learn and practice specific skills that will be required of you. You are training, for example, by attending these calls. You're training for a relationship. And by participating in various personal growth workshops, I know some of you have done that, and by learning effective communication. But make sure you also know and have the necessary tools to use your skills. It's one thing to know what skills are, but you need tools to learn how to do those, like the communication, for example. In the singles workshop that I teach singles the intentional dialogue as a tool to facilitate your communication to be more effective. So lack of preparation prior to your journey will get you into big trouble like it did me. It can actually, on Half Dome, it can actually kill you. Hopefully, lack of preparation won't kill you, but it will kill your relationship if you don't prepare and train and plan. So third, there will be times that your journey will be so challenging and or painful that you will want to quit, turn around, and go back. I work with couples, I mentioned before, and, you know, they are in so much pain. And it's very difficult for them to hang in there. When I started climbing those cables the first trip I took, I hadn't prepared and brought my rubber gloves. And there were no rubber gloves at that point down there. Since then, people now leave gloves at the bottom. But I hadn't prepared, and I didn't have any. And by the time I had reached maybe 15 or 20 feet up those cables, I was already starting to get blisters in my hands. And so it was painful, and I just said, oh, forget it. You must really be prepared for that, and it will be so challenging that you must have a why or a reason that's stronger than your greatest pain. And you must press on to be successful. The only failure is in quitting. You have to keep going in spite of your pain. If you ever have been backpacking or on a long hike, you know that sometimes your feet are killing you, your muscles are killing you, you can hardly walk. But you have to get to your campsite, and or you have to get back to the car. And so you have to keep going, and even though you don't want to. And relationships are like that. Number four, at some point in your journey, you will have to face your fears. And this is the time of testing. You must have a why also that is not only stronger than your pain, but is also stronger than your greatest fear. And your greatest fear will always be triggered in a relationship. For many people, the fear is abandonment or being unloved, being rejected. So you have to leave all your excess baggage behind you by the side of the trail, especially the baggage that you have gained from past relationships, ex-partners, even your parents. You have to leave it by the side of the trail and only take with you what you need for strength and sustenance. Remember that those experiences that you have had have increased your wisdom, and that's what you want to take with you, your wisdom, and the wisdom that you learned from going through those tough experiences in your relationships. You will have to become strong and courageous for parts of your journey, and remember that challenge and adversity only will make you stronger as you face them, just like lifting weights. When you jump in and keep all your focus on your next short-term baby step goal and you put everything you have into reaching it, your fears will subside like mine did. I just focused on the next 2x4 that was bolted in the rock every 8 to 10 feet, and I got to the point where I turned around, and wow, I had no fear of heights. Fifth, you need to keep your eye on that short-term goal and use every bit of strength you have to reach the next one. Don't allow yourself to be overwhelmed and discouraged by focusing on the distant long-term goal. If I would have focused on the top of that cable, I would never have made it. And that's what I did the first time. I thought, oh my gosh, here I am, like maybe 20 feet up, and I'm already, my heart is beating out of my chest, and I'm already dizzy from the fear of heights. And I'm going to go all the way up to that top? Oh yeah, right, sure. That was another reason I turned around. But this time I just focused on making it to the next 2x4. And you'll get there. You'll get to the long-term goal, but only one step at a time, and by creating and accomplishing SMART goals for yourself. Let's take a minute to talk about what SMART goals are. Most people sabotage their goals, like I said, by being vague and not making them action-oriented. If we are going to be successful in reaching goals, we need to know whether we are making progress. And the only way we can do that is if these goals are what we call SMART goals. Now, SMART is an acronym. So S stands for specific positive behaviors. Now, how do you know if it's a behavior? So a behavior is anything that you could audio or videotape. It's an action, it's moving, it's doing something, or it's speaking, which is also movement and doing something. So it has to be a specific positive behavior. You may want to write this down. And the next one, M, stands for measurable. You should be able to count it. How many times are you going to do this new behavior? And the A stands for attainable or achievable. It's baby steps. It's not the Grand Canyon. If you try to make a goal be the rest of your life, or if you're going to do this huge feat, then you're just not going to make it. You can't jump across the Grand Canyon, but you can take one little baby step. And incidentally, baby steps keep your old brain from being afraid. I discovered this one time, another little metaphor here. My mom took my daughter and me to the Caribbean one year, and I didn't realize when I put on that snorkel and got down in the water and, you know, looked at all the beautiful coral and the things growing there and the fish, I didn't realize that I would start feeling like I was suffocating. I felt claustrophobic and I felt like I couldn't breathe. And so I thought, I'm going to try something. And this was as I was facing out in the ocean. I was facing outward and you could see the ocean going down. And it was kind of creepy. And so I turned around and I faced the beach and put my head in the water. And I floated there for a little while. And then I just slowly turned myself around to 180 degrees. And I was facing out towards the ocean again. And it didn't frighten me at all. The reason was because I took these little baby steps. And I think that's the same reason why when I turned around very slowly and I wasn't frightened. You've got to take baby steps or your old brain will freak out and sabotage you. So the R stands for relevant. Each one of these little baby step goals need to be relevant to your long-term goal. So if my goal had been to sit down and just have a picnic on the side of Half Dome, my baby step goal, or if it would have been like go back if I'm afraid, then I would never have reached my long-term goal. So it has to be relevant to your long-term goal of what you're aiming for. And finally, T stands for time limited. Like I said, if your goal is to do something, new behavior for the rest of your life, that's going to freak out your old brain, and it's going to be a Grand Canyon. So you need to make it short term. So it might even just be one day. And after you can reach one day, then 1 week, then 2 weeks, then 1 month. You can make your goals once a day. I'm going to go for a walk. And every week, I'm going to go for maybe once a day, I'm going to go for a 20-minute walk. And every week, I will increase that by 10 minutes. And every 2 weeks, I will go for an hour-long walk. By a month, I'm going to be walking 2 miles or 3 miles or whatever. So you need to make those in little incremental steps. So research has actually proven that if people can accomplish a one-day goal and then a seven-day goal, finally a one-month goal, they will likely be successful in reaching their long-term goals. So if you can hang in there one day at a time, 1 week at a time, and then 1 month, you will be much more likely to reach your long-term goal. So let's do a brief exercise with that now. I'd like you to get a pen or pencil and a piece of paper. So I'm going to give you a minute to do that if you don't have one handy. While you're doing that, I want you to think of an important area in your life where you're not at the place quite where you want to be. Maybe it's your health. Maybe it's a relationship. Maybe it's finances or career or education. Just take a minute to describe your current situation in that area. If you don't want to do this right now, just write down these steps. Describe your current situation in that one area. So with your health, let's use health. That's one I'm often working on. So maybe you're 20 pounds overweight and you're short-winded when you try to exert yourself, and maybe your muscles are getting weaker and you have a hard time stepping up on to something that's steep. What is your current situation? And focus on the pain that you are in because of not being where you want to be. I would not be able to do the Half Dome hike if I had to do it today. What are the downsides of where you're at, either financially or with your career or not being in a relationship, health, whatever area of your life? You may have a different area that you want to focus on. Describe your current situation and focus on the pain you're in. Pain is a tremendous motivator if you're not where you want to be. And then describe specifically what your ideal situation would look like in that one area, say in 10 years. So that may be too long-term goal for some of your areas with a relationship. Hopefully it won't be 10 years, but I'm going to give you an example of that using 10 years. Maybe with your health, you don't want to wait that long, so you could use maybe 2 years. So what you think the very most amount of time you will need to reach your ideal situation. And again, we change slowly. We are more likely to maintain that change, and we're more likely to accomplish it. And then focus how you would feel if you had already met that goal. So I could feel myself climbing Half Dome again, or maybe going up Mount Whitney this time, or maybe just going on a backpack trip, not getting short-winded and out of breath, and not getting sore muscles and jelly legs, because that's what it feels like when you're coming down from Half Dome. You feel like your legs are just turning to jelly. Now, with zero being the least tolerable situation you could imagine around that, and 10 being the ideal, where are you now? So for me, 10 might be in terms of my health. It might be being 30 pounds lighter and being able to hike, go backpacking without getting short-winded and really enjoy myself, really have fun doing that, being in excellent health with all my labs being good results. And 0, well, the least tolerable, I think, would be probably bedridden. Like if I have osteoporosis so bad that I'm starting to break bones and my muscles are so weak I can hardly walk and I shuffle and I can't stand up straight, and being, you know, weighing 200, which I did at one point. So where are you now? So 0 to 10, I would say I'm probably at about, when I climbed Half Dome, I think I was about at a 6 or 7. And I think right now I'm probably about a 4. And so in 5 years, what would your halfway goal be? If you're doing a 10-year goal, in 5 years, in my case, I would want to be already at that 10 in 5 years. Let's say for something longer term, you might want to be halfway to that. And so what would that look like? So let me just say halfway to my goal would be to have dropped 20 more pounds and to be exercising every day, 5 days a week, for at least 30 minutes regularly, walking, doing fun things, being able to maybe dance or do other things. And now still working backwards, what would you need? Where would you need to be in 1 year? Say by January 1st of 2014, where would you need to be? And then working backwards from there, what is the action step you need to reach by 1 month, February 1st? And every month thereafter to achieve your 1 year goal by January 1st, 2014. And in order, I know this is going to take you more thought, so I'm just going to kind of zip through it because you're not going to be able to do this on the phone. In order to reach that step by February next month, what do you need to accomplish next week and each week until February 1st? Finally, what do you need to do today and each day this week to begin to accomplish your goal? What is one baby step that you could do? Well, I could go for a walk. So I could go for a walk each day for 30 minutes, and that would get me started. Now, after about 21 days, 3 weeks, evaluate your progress to see if you're on track. And you have to make adjustments wherever necessary. And then if you are on track, begin to set your next goal. You have to maybe even reevaluate that goal. It might be too easy now. You may have already reached it. Or it may be too hard. You may need to make it smaller. And then do that each month for all year. Now, another thing you need to have is accountability. So you can hold yourself accountable if you're pretty self-disciplined. I would use something like a 5x7 card, but you can use anything. And you want to write your goals down, your one-day goal, 7-day, 30-day, and your long-term goals. And hang it in a place where you're going to be able to see it every day, and carry a copy with you at all times. You can put on there what the downside, if you don't reach your goal, what it will cost you, and if you do reach your goal, what will be the result, the positive result. And then what really helps is to pick a buddy, an accountability buddy. Could be somebody on the phone call here, and share by email or phone whether you completed your goal at the end of the first week or not. If not, what went wrong and what you need to change next week to be successful. You may have a couple of weeks where you don't reach your goal, but that's okay. Failure is only when you quit. You learn by every time you don't reach your goal, you can learn from that, what you did that didn't work or what you need to do to get out of bed in the morning early to exercise or whatever. Every time you don't succeed, you use that as a learning experience. So let me give you an example of a possible goal that you might choose as a single in order to have a relationship the relationship of your dreams. And you might write these down if you want. So I'm not single, but I'm going to pretend I am. My 10-year goal is to be in an incredible relationship, a committed relationship with my dream partner. And we are both committed to lifelong learning and personal growth. My 5-year goal would be to have attended a Getting the Love You Want couples workshop and be proactively practicing all the skills that we learned there, and if we need to, using a relationship coach. Now, my 18-month goal, and I would, in real life, I would have a couple of goals in between each, this 5, 10, and 18-month, but I'm just being short here. My 18-month goal is to be in a dream relationship by July 1st, 2014, with a partner who definitely meets all my requirements, most of my needs, and some of my wants. So those of you who have taken the Relationship Success Training class know what I'm talking about by the requirements, needs, and wants. My 12-month goal is to be in a monogamous relationship with a potential dream partner who seems to meet my requirements and needs, and also for me to have created a long-term growth goal, personal growth goal for myself. See, I'm working backwards, so this may not make a whole lot of sense because I'm kind of skipping ahead. My 9-month goal is to have all three of my most important growth goals, my short-term growth goals, met. My 6-month goal is to be dating 3 potential dream partners whom I am attracted to. There's chemistry. Have my important values in common with, and we enjoy spending time together. Additionally, I have reached 2 of my growth goals, my short-term growth goals. My 3-month goal is to be attending regularly at least 3 venues where my potential dream partner is likely to be found, and I've reached 1 of my short-term growth goals. My 2-month goal is to have SMART goals set for myself in each of my 3 needed areas of growth. See, that's what I was talking about, those short-term growth goals. At 2 months, I'm going to have those SMART goals set. My 6-week goal is to identify 3 of my most important areas of needed growth in order to become a dream partner. My 4-week goal is to identify my requirements, needs, and wants in my dream relationship. My 3-week goal is to clearly identify my life purpose. See how each one is being built on the one before it. My 2-week goal is to describe and write about my dream life in detail. My 1-week goal is to identify my values. My 4-day goal is to create a vision board of my dream life. And my 1-day goal is to create a mind map of the components of my life. So 1 day, 4 day, 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 6 weeks, 2 months, 3 months, each one builds upon the one we that is before it. And each one is required to have that those before it in order to be able to accomplish the next one. So just like Half Dome, when you get to the top, the view is incredible. You can look down and see what you have achieved and where you came from. You made it, and you are stronger for it. So now you want to go out and mentor someone else to help them make it to the top. That really helps you to ground the skills that you've learned and strengthen the knowledge that is behind those skills when you teach and mentor somebody else. It helps you to really keep those. It's another way to hold yourself accountable. So I want to just take a moment to encourage you to schedule your Dream Partner Strategy session with me if you haven't already done so. Now, this is a free 45-minute coaching session to help you start gaining clarity on some of what we've been talking about today. And the website for that, I'll email it to you, but if you want to write it down, it's meetme, M-E-E-T, like meet up, meetme, M-E-E-T-M-E, dot S as in Sam, O as in ostrich, / Carol A. Anderson, CarolAAnderson, meetme.so / Carol A. Anderson. So you can go there, and I have a number of slots open where you can schedule appointments, and it will email me and tell me that you've done so. And then I will email you a questionnaire to get started on so that we can spend the time working on some goals and things for you, getting clarity. So I'm going to open up the mic here in just a minute. Some of you may not want to stay on for questions and comments, but I'm going to ask you to press the number 1 on your keypad. And while you're doing that, if you want to go ahead and think of a question or a comment, and press the number 1. And I want to tell you about next month's call. Next month, we're going to continue talking about stages and steps and so forth. And we're going to talk about the stages of relationship commitment. Most people think that you fall in love, you make a commitment, you live happily ever after. But you really need to be more strategic. And so I'm going to help you understand how you sabotage your relationships when you fall in love and immediately make a commitment with each other. I'm going to talk about what the two different kinds of dating are and why knowing the difference is vital to your relationship success. Third, what mindset you need to avoid serial monogamy, where you just go from one relationship to the next and you never really become committed. Also, what people don't realize, I'm going to explain, is why engagement is not really commitment, or at least it should not be commitment. If you get engaged to be married, you are not really committed yet. And so, therefore, what is commitment really, and how most people think that they are committed when they really are not? And I'll always give you way more than that, but those are the main points that we're going to be talking about. So I hope you join us. So if you have a question or a comment, raise your hand by pressing 1 on your keyboard. Okay, Azima, you should have the mic.
I just want to thank you for your generosity in making this possible. And there's lots of great things. It's interesting that my fear around making this happen for a relationship is way bigger than my fear in making this happen for career, which are immediate and like I need to make that happen. So I just really want to appreciate you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you appreciating me. So thank you. Any other questions or comments? And otherwise, I will see you all Saturday, January 26th. Bye now.